All right, and we welcome everyone back to the latest Mountain West Connection show here. It's MWCConnection.com. I'm one of the hosts here, Jeremy, and Chris is joining us as always.
Kushapow!
What was that?
I decided to be excited.
Excited for the show, or excited for Breaking Bad premiere tonight? Are you Heisenberg? You all ready for that?
No. I haven't. You never watched that show. You know what I'm excited for? I'm excited. Football camp is back. We're doing the podcast, and there are 18 days until football starts.
So you're not. I take it. So we've had this discussion before. As a chemist, you think you should watch the show, but we've never seen it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Got to watch it, man. That's all I can say. So hope people are. This will be due obviously Monday, the day after, and hopefully I have time to see it by then. But that's why I'm avoiding Twitter and Facebook and for the next couple hours and maybe even tomorrow morning before I know what happened, because there's 8 left. And like I said, that's a great, that's awesome show, one of the best ever. But the Pigskins coming to football. Like I said, just over 2 weeks away from the Thursday, August 29th kickoff, and I assume South Carolina gets that coveted first spot as always on ESPN or ESPN2, but fall camp is here, and this is going to be the UNLV-centric show here talking about the Rebels, but since we're not in the middle of the offseason, we're not doing shows weeks ahead of time, there's actually some, and we haven't done a video show in a while, we are going to talk about some news around the league, but there's not much going on, even though fall camp is here, right?
Fall camp is here. People are getting set in. I mean, there's just so many. There's a lot of stuff going on, but a lot of it is also, you know, not exactly, you know, completely out there for us to gather.
There could be, but it's nothing. I'm excited, and everything. I went to a scrimmage the other day doing some other work at BYU. It's like half the time they're doing jumping jacks. Like, really, coaches, show us, do something. But it's like in the league, typically it's like, who's the quarterback? Who's the starting running back? Who's the wide receiver? Whatever. But nearly every spot is settled. Boise, Air Force, Wyoming, everything's settled except the
Colorado
biggest,
State.
Yeah, that's the biggest, the biggest story is the Rams, CSU. They have three, actually, as our Jacob, our CSU guy said, possibly even 4 guys, not likely, but 3 main guys in the mix. And Jim McElwain saying, I need somebody to step up. Who's going to step up? Nobody stepped up, and that's the biggest story. There's a few things here and there, like all these younger guys. I'm going to step up this year. Boise State got not Nate Potter. That's a couple years old. Charles Leno is like, we're going to be a great offense. We have all this talent back. Kirby Moore is going to be great. Matt Miller is going to be even much better with another year with Joe Southwick. Stuff like that. And Wyoming's hoping they can find a running game, and Robert Heron will not be injured this year. Or Jerry Rice Jr. at UNLV wants to see the field. Great and all. Young guys want to do well. But as for the meat of the news, anything exciting?
I guess the two things that would kind of excite me that stand out as unique. First of all, the Jackson Twins dismissal from
correct.
New Mexico.
Yes, I was going to get to that. Let's discuss that really quick. Is this like pop? Are they like playing peewee football or something? it's basically here's what happened. There's two twin brothers out of Texas. They played about 6 or 7 games last year. They're both defensive backs, potential starters. They've been seeing time in the first and second team. However, I'm pulling up the name now. Was it Rashad and Vershard?
Rashad and Vershard.
That's right. And they're obviously twins with a similar name. Trying to get the right one here. I'm trying to find the right name here. Basically, what happened?
I've got it up here. Davey went after Rashad to be mean, but rather made it clear to him that he needs to play better. I'm quoting from our article. So basically, instead of being, you know, just aggressive, you actually need to play well as well. And Rashad left because Davey was scolding his brother.
Well, it's like, come on, man. Okay, I get it. This happens in football. You're going to get yelled at. It's not because it's not like he doesn't like you. I should rephrase that. More often than not, it's not because he has an axe to grind against you.
No, you have expectations.
And here's the thing. When I played sports and stuff, whatever it would be, usually I did water polo and some other stuff in high school and college. But basically, if they're yelling at you, they obviously care about you, want you better. I'd be more concerned if you're not doing anything and never get talked to at all. That's worse. They're like, oh, who cares? Bring in the next guy. They don't care about you. They obviously care about you if they're wanting to get upset about what you're doing. And so they need to realize, yeah, it's possibly heat of the moment. It's getting in your face. You're out there in camp, whatever it was, day seven, I think, of their camp. And they're out in Rodizio, New Mexico, however far that is from Albuquerque. They're not on campus. It's camp sucks. I did stuff where, like I said, the water polo. We go in and swim 2 weeks before. And we're not a swim team. We're doing water polo, but you're swimming 2, 3, 4 miles a day, doing weights, doing leg work, getting in shape, real shape, not just on healthy and good weight, but you're working hard, and it sucks. You're practicing 2 times a day. They're watching film and doing other stuff. It's mentally draining, and it sucks because you're just tired all the time, and you're wanting to do well, and somebody else, it's like, I'm done. I'm over the edge. I'm out of here. But yeah. you gotta take it, man. You can maybe take a play out. That one might be okay. It's like, I'm going to get a water break real quick or something, but they never really said, maybe I'm correct me wrong, but Rashard, it was the one,
No, it was Rashad who was the one that
Yes, Rashad, yes, sir. I'm sorry. It's just twins, same name. But did you ever see why or read why he was suspended? All I heard was that he was reprimanded.
I know he was reprimanded.
And he was sent home to Albuquerque.
For, I'm guessing, like, over-aggressive play.
I thought I heard it was poor play. It was poor play, not playing.
It was poor play.
But there's never reason why. Because you heard how Rashad, where he protested, left the field, and even though the defensive coordinator urged him to come back on, he did not want to do so. And so I could see why he left the team. That makes sense. However, well, it makes sense in the term of what the reason. But the reason for Rashard is not known. So I don't know if he yelled back at the coach or I don't know why he was sent home. Just for, because I've seen practices where you're not supposed to take a guy down if they're just wearing helmet and shoulder shells or maybe even just helmets and shorts and jersey, not even shells in the top half where you take a hit, you knock a guy down, you're removed from practice. I've seen that plenty of times, but it just
well,
is
regardless,
an
regardless
incident
of
on the practice field. So it's suspended definitely after an incident on the practice field Wednesday. This was this past, like over almost a week ago. And so I read a poor play, but it never, so I don't know. It could, like I said, it could have been over aggressiveness, could have been something, but just, I read a couple of things where just it wasn't playing well, so that's why I got after him.
Yeah, regardless of what it is, they're gone. New Mexico needs to find new cornerbacks, which could easily, hinder their progress.
Well, their depth, they're obviously not been the best team over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
These two guys could have been potential starters or nickelbacks, or at worst, it seems like they'd have been second team, which means you see a lot of time either in the like passing game. They're 3-3. Oh, no, that's Rocky Long, not Dave. Sorry, I'm thinking of the old 3-3-5. They would have just seen time in passing situations rotate in for starters. But now they have guys like Tim Foley, Donnie Duncan, Isaiah Brown, a couple other guys who are going to move up on depth chart. But injuries could be an issue with that area, and they've already been poor enough. They can't lose players then. I don't know. They would have been key, but it's just stupid. It's like, why are you pouting and running away when your brother making a protest? Like, come on, you be your own person. Don't just do what they're going to do.
No, yeah.
So that's the big storyline. Then let's. Did you have anything else?
You know what? Yeah. This? Here's the other storyline, but this brings us into UNLV football, and this is not one that we covered because it really isn't much of a storyline. It's more kind of like a cool story. So I was flipping through the Las Vegas Review-Journal today. On the online, and I was going through UNLV seeing what we were going to talk about. And apparently, there is a wide receiver, and see, Bill Connolly doesn't even have him listed.
Uh-oh, what? Bill, alert the Bill C. What's going on? What did he
alert the Bill C, because this is a player who walked on when the last couple of years he was an equipment manager for the team.
Interesting.
He's walked on as a wide receiver. So, and Hauk has let him walk on. They don't know his timings or anything like that. Nobody knows exactly what he's going to do.
Did he play in high school?
He did play in high school. He played at Mojave High, which is, if I remember correctly, in the center of town, a little bit north.
Of Las Vegas?
Of Las Vegas. Okay. So he's from Las Vegas High School. He also grew up on a German Air Force base. So he's, you know, I'm getting this all from Kantowski's article. So basically, he can talk with Max Ellert, who's the Rebels' starting middle linebacker. So maybe they can dial up blitzes if he just stands on the sidelines, you know, unnoticed. So that could definitely be something
interesting. What are they saying about him? Like playing time, anything where he's impressed at all or done anything?
They haven't done anything. They just said they let him walk on, and so he's a walk on. He's officially part of the team, but they don't know what kind of role he's going to play.
Okay, that's interesting. That's always a cool story if he does something. Even if he just plays special teams. He doesn't hurt to have an extra body out there, especially for a team that has not been good. In.
Right now, UNLV will take everybody.
Randall Cunningham? Back then. Oh, one thing, we'll get to that, but CSU, basically, it's actually reading the latest over at the Coloradoan. Is that right how you say it? Coloradoan, I believe?
Yeah.
Colorado. Basically, Jim McElwain saying, because we're going to get to UNLV, but we just kind of skimmed over this, but it is the big story. He wants competition to bring out the best, which makes a ton of sense. You don't want to name, especially when it's a tight race, and they played three starters last year, injury, inefficiency, and more injury, I'm assuming, if I recall. There's a broken collarbone and some other stuff last year. But he wants somebody to stand out. I guess it could be Garrett Grayson or Connor Smith. There are three or four guys who could make a name for themselves to get in there, but it's going to be one of those two guys. And I don't know. It's not they're like the running game, like their OC, Dave Baldwin, doesn't really care about how the running ability of the quarterbacks. CSU's not going to run a zone option or zone read two more often than not. They're just going to sling it back and do a normal handoff like Donnell Alexander or Chris Nwoke. But that's kind of – he said maybe next week. I'm assuming he'd want to do it a week, maybe two or three days before camp start – or not camp, but camp ends and fall camp – or week one begins. I'm getting all fall camp mixed up here. But you know what I mean? Like, it's all run together essentially when you have fall camp and then school begins. I don't know who the difference would be. They're both pretty good. They both played fairly well last year. But somebody step up. Show us something. I want to scrimmage and – even when McElwain mentioned something today about it, he didn't really say anything too much about the quarterbacks, about saying, oh, we just want somebody to stand out. We want a leader in camp who's going to perform well. So I'm assuming, yeah, once I'd say game week, they'll announce it. But do you have any preference or who would start better suited for what they're trying to do?
I really don't. It's honestly, for Colorado State, It's exactly right. It's who's going to be able to step up and, you know, show leadership, because he who controls the quarterback position controls the team.
Very, very poetic there. Nice.
I know. Thank you.
And basically, I think
it's through half a gin and tonic.
Yes. Nice. I'm assuming whoever can make the most plays. The only real difference reading through this piece is like Connor Smith has a larger arm. But the thing is, whoever wins a job is going to have it, because Grayson has 2 years left, Smith has three. So whoever wins a job this year has it at least for next year, depending one of the two that gets it. But it's leadership, and if you can complete the ball, because you make plays, you're going to be the quarterback. Just because you're Jamarcus Russell can throw it off your knees 80 yards in a garbage can down the field doesn't mean you're going to be the starting quarterback. So that's the biggest story. I don't think there's too much of anything else. Air Force seems fine with everything they have. They think Marcus Hendricks could be a – this is okay. We know what Air Force does to run the ball. Headline at the Gazette, Colorado Springs Gazette. Tight end Marcus Hendricks has size to be an asset in Air Force passing game.
No.
Is there something kind of wrong with that?
Just slightly.
So look for the.
First of all, he's a tight end. So that means if he's a tight end, he should have the size to control at least a short passing game.
Oh, I didn't. That wasn't even where I was going, but that's excellent. Astute. Listening, I was just going with he's 6'6", so that's obviously size right there, and 240, which is okay for that type, that position. But what's he going to do now if he's an asset in the passing game? Like I said, do those tight end screens instead of throwing the ball twice a game? He'll get four throws a game, maybe. I'm just saying, maybe three, just because they don't pass very much. And that, I thought that was kind of an interesting title for that position for Air Force passing game in general. But that's kind of all we got. That's all the news, really. San Diego State thinks they can be great, or they want Rocky Long to admit they could be great. And let's just move into UNLV football, because that's the bulk of the show. We don't need to spend too much time on bits and pieces of news. Basically, UNLV, here's the deal. We've already kind of joked that they're they have not been good the past couple of years, which is an obvious, astute observation from anybody from who's known anything about anything. They were 2-11 last year. Somehow they beat Air Force. And they beat New Mexico pretty convincingly as well. That's their only 2 wins. However, as we discussed in the preseason, or, oh, geez, months ago in our kind of overview, they played some good, tough teams close. Or teams close, sorry, not tough teams, teams close. Like the triple overtime loss to Minnesota by 3, lose to Washington State by 8 points, hang with Nevada within a touchdown, within double digits, or 11 points to San Diego State. Barely lost to Wyoming, but then they got crushed by Hawaii, which is, oh, that's pretty bad. Basically, what we said last year, as you'll agree with me, is that they were more competitive but didn't get the wins. That's their main thing last year. So that is improvement.
It's much improvement. And, I mean, and so here's the thing. A lot of that is, once again, looking back at the review journal, is Sherry had not they attribute it to Sherry's 7 interceptions over the last 3 games as to why they didn't exactly, you know, win more. But they were saying because, or the possible explanation, if you look, Colorado State, Wyoming, and Hawaii, they should have beaten those teams. But the reason why they were saying was because Sherry, after he got blindsided at the Boise State game, wasn't the same for the rest of the season. And so he wasn't able to effectively pass throughout the game, and which is something we saw.
Yeah,
because Sherry was on a pace to break the Mountain West freshman quarterback passing record before the Boise State game.
Because he was it fifth in the league in passing at just over 2,500 yards.
He was fourth. He finished fourth.
Well, no, that's yards per game at fourth.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, that's probably better accuracy in total yards because of bowl games and things. But right there, not right there by right behind Joe Southwick and Cody Fajardo and even Brett Smith. Well, Brett Smith played a few less games, but he's right there in the thick of things. That's why there's so many good quarterbacks. We don't even mention Nick Sherry. He's a freshman, and he played reasonably well better than reasonably well. He missed a Wyoming game, but if you look before, he had, like, versus Louisiana Tech, 4 TDs, 1 touchdown, or, yeah, 4 TDs, a pick, 378, but that's also their La Tech with Sonny Dykes going nuts on the field, playing pinball football, essentially, throwing every 10 seconds. He played, versus Washington State. That was a game, the chance to win. New Mexico, he put up a good amount of yards. However, the last game, CSU, 88 yards, Hawaii, 166, didn't play against Wyoming, and Boise State, I think he probably got knocked out, I think. He's only 71 yards. And a 2 yeah. pick. So, like, before that game, he wasn't doing good. It just wasn't doing terrible. You know what I mean? He's a freshman.
No, he was doing decent. And he was really, I mean, for a freshman who started, I mean, he really stepped up his play.
Yeah, because he had 9 picks over the last 5 games he played in.
And the one game that stands out to me that I remember from last year was the Nevada game.
Why was that?
And so, mainly because they were leading the whole
game. Oh, that's right. Oh, that's
they were leading the whole game, and I think I forgot the reason why they lost. But oh well, the reason why they lost was because the defense couldn't hold up. They had 21. The Wolfpack had 21 points in the fourth quarter. That was half the Rebels lost 42-37.
Yeah,
half of those points came in the fourth quarter for the Wolfpack.
Can't do that.
Sherry had put up enough yards and enough points to basically win them the game.
Especially for their offense. I mean, they scored, let's see here, I don't have the points. Yeah, they scored 37 points. That was what their second, that was their second most output all year. The only other game was higher was the Air Force with 38. Even when they played La Tech, who they could score a lot of points because they go so fast, they still weren't there. Second most output, and they plenty of points to win. Plenty of points, because we know Nevada's defense wasn't all that special last year.
And even they had put up a good fight against San Diego State, really, until, I mean, they were holding San Diego State. They held them to only 24 yards, but really they had started the game out strong and just couldn't keep it up.
That's the thing. Part of it is they don't have the depth. They don't have the experience. They don't know how to win. That's a huge problem. Like, it's hard for a team that's been losing. Like, it's kind of a almost a miracle that UNLV, or not the Rebels, sorry, San Jose State did as well as they did last year. They bring in one player, David Fells. They go 11-2. I think they won two or three games the year before, like a 7-9 game swing or somewhere along those lines. I don't see UNLV has the talent, I think, because look, you got Nick Sherry quarterback, Tim Cornette, who I remember during the Minnesota game last year, I was on Twitter and some people asking me a few of the some draft, like I get all these sometimes replies about draft, or whatever draft guy is asking about, like the draft scout countdown or whoever, you know, about those draft guys, kind of not the big ones, but kind of the middle of the pack ones or not well-known ones, still do a good job, but they ask anybody about these guys, and they're asking about Tim Cornette. He's one of the best backs in the league. Like, on our list, he's upcoming, or not our list, our top.
He still hasn't come out yet.
He's I'm not going to say win, but he's within the next couple of days. He's a top 20 player. And if you look at what he did last year, he was one of the better players in the Mountain West rushing, but he could have been better. But they're losing, they're behind so many times in all these games. He didn't have the chance to put up more stats. He put up 1,200 yards, 7 TDs, and 5 yards a carry. Very good. Imagine if you were able to get 15 or get 20 more carries. He got
The hypothetical argument is this. If UNLV's defense was strong enough from last year to basically stay competitive the whole game, that the rushing game would still be effect, Tim Cornette would easily be as good as Adam Muema and Casey Carrier.
Yeah, he would have more stats. He had weight, like the carry difference between him and Muema, let's see, 47 different carries, and their average per carry, well, Muema was pretty good above 6, still 1 yard difference and a lot more TDs just because San Diego State's better, but you give Cornette 25 more carries, he gets maybe 1,500 yards. If he can get four more, okay, just be conservative, 4 more carries a game, and that's what, just say simple 50 carries at 6 yards a carry almost.
That's another 24 yards.
250 yards.
Yeah.
So that puts it, well, maybe not 1,500, but very close to it. And they're never in the red zone to score points. They didn't score a lot of points. They're always in long, second and long, third and long, because didn't Nick Sherry get sacked quite a few times, I believe, last year? Or at least that Boise one was pretty nasty.
No, and that's what did him for the rest of the season.
That's the thing. Like, if they can somehow have a defense, yeah, they were 25 sacks allowed last year, which was middle of the pack in the Mountain West. But for a team that already has a poor defense, they need to have a better protection scheme than that to be competitive. And this is in 13 games as well, so they got the extra game for playing Hawaii. It comes down to, if they can get a defense that's better, at least middle of the pack, they could surprise quite a few teams.
And that's why they brought in Tim Houck. So Bobby Houck's brother, Bobby Houck, asked for help.
Desperation move.
Desperation, dude. And the fact that he was willing to come and help his brother out, I mean, that says a lot.
Because he came, he was the I don't know how you compare this move, because he was a defensive backs coach for the Cleveland Browns.
Well, it's a pretty lateral move.
That's what I'm trying to think. Well, because, okay, you're in the NFL, obviously higher pedestal, but you're a position coach, not a coordinator. So it's – and you're on a bad NFL team as well.
That's what I'm saying. He could do more with UNLV than he could do with Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. So he was – and he was with him at Montana for a while as well. He was the NFL – he played in the NFL for almost – I think he played defensive back for a while in the NFL.
He was on the Montana team, I think, that – did they make – I think they won a national title with him as a defensive coordinator. And I think they made another one. He's there from 2004 to 2007.
Wait, for Montana? Oh, I don't know why I thought you said Joe Montana. I'm thinking the school Montana. Because we said NFL, they said Montana. I'm like, oh, geez, I am. No, I get what you mean. He was with Montana for. He went to Montana. He played defensive back. I only have his playing career because he played NFL for 12 years.
He played from 1990 to 2002. Yeah. He played for the Patriots, the Packers, the Broncos, the Seahawks, the Colts.
Yeah.
He played for the Eagles, and you're not going to like this. He's the one who caused Michael Irvin's career-ending injury.
The broken neck where they cheered for that? Classy.
Thank you, Philadelphia fans.
Yes. Okay, I was trying to look for his coaching things. He was with Hauk. He was with in Montana. I don't know what he really brings, but it can't be worse last year. They were 100th last year in total defense nationally. And I don't – it's something where you think it's Las Vegas. I've always – how do they do it in basketball but not football? I know basketball, if you get two players or three players at one time, you're really good. I saw the HBO documentary finally about HBO like 2 months ago done by them. Obviously, there's some sketchy stuff with possible academic issues, stuff like that. You know what I mean? Stuff happens. Paying players, allegedly, since Tarkanians beat the NCAA, which was, what, first coach ever to beat them? May not be the last, apparently, for what's going on the past year or two. But I don't get it. They're transfer you. They get all these guys from USC, Southern California. But the thing is, they are a literal, what is it, 4 hours from Los Angeles to Nevada or Las Vegas by driving. Fairly nothing too drastic.
Yeah.
I don't know how they can't get players from San Diego, Los Angeles area, if I can speak, not college towns, but L.A., Orange County.
All I'm going to say here
I don't get is, it.
Look, and I was actually, I had a friend, okay, so I was discussing this on Thursday night with some UCR people. The Inland Empire is a recruiting hotbed, absolute hotbed. And the fact that UNLV can't pick up a couple recruits out of there, or at least, you know, fairly strong recruits, I mean, it's great. It's great to see that. I'm looking at Bill C's preview. Okay, you got Sherry and Caleb Herring, who are three stars. Tim Cornett's three stars. Adonis Smith, who's a transfer from Northwestern, he'll be eligible to play this year. Another three-star running back. You've got, and then you've got a series of three-star running wide receivers.
Well, Caleb Herring moved to wide receiver. I don't know why he's listed under there in running back, but he was QB, moved to wide receiver.
No, quarterback.
Excuse me?
He was listed as quarterback.
And wide receiver, Caleb Herring. He moved to wide receiver last year after he lost a job.
Well, anyway.
Whatever, but I mean, he's a highly regarded guy, three stars.
Regardless, if Hauk has been doing his job, he's got a whole bunch of redshirt freshmen and sophomores this year who, you know, he personally recruited. They're going to be the ones who are going to see playing time this year. And last year, the secondary was weak. They were all young. A lot of them were freshmen. They're going to have experience this year, and they need to improve.
The hope is that it's not like just because you have experience doesn't mean it's good experience. You had a bad unit. The hope is they're not going to get worse. Just because you bring back eight starters, but you're on a 2-11 team like they were. I'm not saying the amount of starters you're bringing back, but if you have all these starters back, but you're a bad team, what does that outweigh? Is the experience good from knowing last year that you got your head beat in a lot of games where you're close and couldn't get it done? Are you going to be able to get past that to a program that's never won in a decade? They went to the Las Vegas Bowl at, what, 99 or something like that? First
2000, year, and they absolutely destroyed Arkansas.
Yeah, that was like the only bowl game they've been to since then. It's like, I don't know how they can't get guys who are being considered by Washington State, Cal, even UCLA from a couple years ago. Now they're on the up and up. Or Arizona State. I don't see how they can't get those guys to come to UNLV, where if you go to those schools, you're going to redshirt, you're going to probably sit behind, probably not going to see significant playing time until your redshirt sophomore year, your third year in the program. Whereas you go to UNLV, you still may redshirt a year, but you'll be probably playing that second year right away. Or if you're gonna be a true freshman, you'll probably see special team playing time and then probably be a second or third at most other positions. I'm not saying they're going to get all these great guys, but I don't tell you can't outbeat a recruit who wants to go to Washington State over UNLV.
Well, I can. I can. If you're recruiting, you've got the name factor automatically. And that's the thing. UNLV does not have the name factor. They haven't had the name factor since John Robinson was the coach.
Even then, that was a disaster.
Yeah. It was one good season, and the rest
Let's
were
give up.
You know, kind of crap.
He's gave
and
up.
See, and here's the thing, is having grown up in Las Vegas, I've endured horrible, horrible seasons with Robinson, Sanford, and Hauk. And really, out of all of those, Hauk seems like the one who's been trying. You know, Sanford had the wins 5-7.
But then he bashed the program before he even got fired. He bashed the program.
Yeah, he bashed the program. Hauk is the one who's honestly looking to try and turn things around. He got a defensive coordinator who has a pretty good reputation to come to UNLV.
Even though it's his brother, but still.
Even though it's his brother.
10 years in the league, been a coach with him. He knows how to win a program, knows what it's not that he's just his brother. He coached with him. So it's not like he's just, oh, you're my relative. You've coached football. Come play with me or come be on my staff.
No.
He knows what Hauk is about because he's been with this program in Montana for a couple years. He's less than a decade removed from the NFL. And I don't know what their changes they've really made or what's going on, but if their defense can be at least average, they could get a couple teams. I'm trying to see how many returning starters they have on defense. I'm trying to pull that up here.
They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, over, are we talking about starters?
Right? Yeah.
Oh. Three, four.
Well, defensive back is pretty six, coming back.
Seven. I'm going to say 7 starters who played in all 13 games, but they've got so many more who played 11, 12, 13 games. Apparently, but once again, it comes back to I see a lot of these numbers, especially in the secondary, sophomore, junior, you know. It was a young team last year as well.
Looking at the Orlando Sentinel, they do their countdown on the College Gridiron 365. They put UNLV as 120th team.
Hey, better than 5 teams, right?
I guess. They insist they return 10 defensive starters, which, like we said,
that makes sense, yeah.
It's good. Probably assumes that a couple started more than half the year. The strength, they still mention him doing so well in Montana. But here's the thing, like you pointed out as well, Hauk should have his recruits in place to start executing a system that made him successful in the Big Sky. Because, like I said, they got the fifth most returning starters in the nation. He's been there. It's just his 4th season. So anybody he's recruited, I don't even count his first year of recruiting because you come in when the recruiting's basically done. So he's really had 3 recruiting seasons and 2 years of players in the league or in his team, in his system. 2 years, you know what I mean, the second year and third year. This is his 4th year, so all the freshmen come in. Two and a half, really, if you get what I'm saying. Not many. Who knows how many true freshmen will play. So this is his make or break year. Before we kind of get into the schedule and anything, what do you think he has to do to retain his position? Because he's only won 2 games each of his first 3 years.
How I know the Las Vegas media and how I know how the Las Vegas athletic department works, UNLV's athletic department works, he's got to get 4 wins this year. At least, minimum.
Okay, because last year they were close.
If Sanford survived 3-2-9, 2-8 seasons and managed to then pull out a 5-7 week season, he needs to have a 4-8 minimum.
Because I remember last year, we were not giddy over the team, but we were seeing improvement because they were playing close, like that Minnesota game.
You could go to last year's UNLV podcast. And you could say, I mean, I totally made a prediction wrong. I think I said 4 or 5 wins last year.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, I wasn't that far off in terms of scores.
And I think we said, what we said is that they'll be more competitive, but wins may not improve, which is exactly what happened. Like, I'm looking at their 2011 schedule. Okay, I won't say the team name, but losses, 51-17, 59-7, 41-16. That's a loss to Southern Utah FCS. 37-0, 41-14, 45-17. Those are all 56-9 to TCU. Those are all 30-plus point losses, 50-point-plus losses in some of those games. And like I said, 2012, their Hawaii loss was just a debacle. Maybe they just didn't care, losing by 38 points. Whatever their worst loss besides that, CSU loss was pretty bad by 22 points. But every other game, and Boise, but that's kind of expected. Every other game was within double. Even like I said, San Diego State within 11 points. They didn't get blown out so bad where it's like, oh, this is old UNLV losing 50-10. They had maybe 2. Even the game 58-31 loss to La Tech, you still put up 31 points. But
it was against La Tech.
Yeah, and they had one of the best offenses in the country. But everything else, like I said, they weren't. And that's what I say. They weren't embarrassed outside of. I'd say the only embarrassing game is the Hawaii game because that's 48-10. The next game would be La Tech, 50-31.
Well, I would say losing against NAU was pretty bad.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I was just looking at the different point differential. Yeah, that's pretty embarrassing. But I'm saying they're not Well, hey, that's an improvement. What do they say they lost to Southern Utah by? Last FCS as well?
Pretty bad.
41-16, where they just gave up.
41-16, yeah. No, I totally remember that. And but so this comes – but, I mean, this comes back to last year. They were within –
they're competitive.
They were in 14 points of starting the season 4-0.
Very true. They had plenty of chances. UNLV, Washington State. They had chance. They were never. It was always like, oh, we're down 14, we're down 15, we'll score a touchdown. They kept coming back. That was a game where it's an 8-point difference. But if I recall, it was always we're down 10, we're down 14, we got to score to get within a touchdown. They could defense again. They couldn't make that stop. That's kind of where they're at. And even like look at Utah State, if they would have made a kick against BYU or Wisconsin, they would have gone to the Orange Bowl.
Utah State was a very good team.
Yeah.
So I mean, the improvement was there, and so now the improvement needs to be the wins.
And they can do it because looking at their offense, we'll kind of get back to more personnel issues here. Their offensive line, they did lose Doug Zisman and Yusef Rogers had over 60 career starts. But they bring back four other guys, and then this, three other starters, and that doesn't even really include Ron Scoggins, three-star, who had 10 career starts. So they bring back at least three starters. He's coming back. They have this dude. Look, if you see when Andrew Oberg is 6'7", he needs to probably beef up above that 280. But they'll have a large offensive line, and if Cornett can do anything, which we know he can, and these guys can protect Sherry, I think their offense will be pretty good. It was not bad last year. That's the thing. If they can make the protection and limit the sacks that we mentioned earlier in the show, their offense will be their strength. And then defense, which, well, we don't need to go over defense again, but I wanted to mention that offensive line because they bring back four guys who had over 10 career starts. Can't have injuries, which obviously you couldn't say about that any team. And like look at their defensive line. They'll kind of go to the defense. They lose a couple – well, no, they didn't lose this guy, but like they Mark Gurek, Alex Coleman had led in tackles for loss. A lot of guys who got in the backfield, and they're experienced. Like you said, they're young in the defensive backfield, but all these guys on defensive line, they have four seniors who had plenty of playing time last year. It doesn't include a couple redshirt freshmen. So they had guys who can get to the ball behind the line of scrimmage, but defensive backs, that's their issue, I think.
Yeah.
But let's get to the schedule. I just want to kind of mention that. They have experience.
So I want to play a game.
Yes.
Okay, so before we get to the schedule, what game would you like to play first? Schedule game, schedule projection game, or Bobby Howe keeping his job game?
I got an idea, so let's do Bobby Howe, because I have something I want to throw at you, which I could, because we have not discussed this before. I was thinking about it. I have two choices about if there's a replacement, and I bet you know one of them, but let's go ahead and go ahead with your game here.
Okay. So I'm going to say that they hit the wins needed that he keeps his job for next season.
Okay.
Okay. That's flat out. It's just will he keep his job?
Oh, that's all it is? Will he keep his job?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of goes into the schedule. Here's my better game, which I think he will, unless there's disastrous, because we'll come back to this part here. But here's what I want to say. If he does lose his job, which is a distinct possibility, who do you think would be a replacement? I have two names that come to mind immediately.
Who?
I guarantee you'll know one of them. And they're both – okay, do you want a clue at all really quick?
I do want a clue. There's so many names I've been.
One's a current head coach. One's a offensive coordinator.
One's a current head coach.
Yeah, current head coach. And I'll give you another clue. They are in a power conference. You got to get this one right.
Lane Kiffin.
Yes. It's not out of the possibility.
No, totally. And he would fit very well in Vegas.
That's right. Well, are you referring to Tarkanian-esque items going on?
Yeah. Allegedly. Maybe. Allegedly. No, I'm referring to the overall attitude of Las Vegas.
Yes.
Lane Kiffin would be very good for it.
He's a showman.
Actually, that would be a team he could actually coach.
That's what I was thinking. Because think about it, he's never won anything anywhere.
Flat out.
Right? Because Tennessee, okay, he left after 1 year. Raiders, players didn't respect him. he did good. The only reason, I don't know how he weasels away to kick out Norm Chow to be the OC at USC, but that wasn't him. That was Norm Chow, Lane Kiffin, and Steve Sarkisian. And then you also, and so you had, and Pete Carroll's the head coach. So it's like, you're an all-star group right there coaching everybody. And he doesn't get Wentz. He could, I don't know if it'd be this year. He could even be the coach in 2 years if, say, Halk does get 4 or 5 wins, but then drops off the year after. The other coach, which would be immediately if Halk is gone, Dave Schramm at Fresno State, because I don't think he's going to be that be around there too much longer.
Who?
Dave Schramm.
Oh, Dave Schramm. Okay.
Fresno State offensive coordinator.
Actually, you know who I was thinking right now?
Who were you thinking?
I'll give you a hint. Okay. Former WAC coach. And,
what incarnation of the WAC?
Incarnation. Almost current incarnation of the WAC.
Are they coach? They're not coaching now.
He is not coaching.
Rob Akey.
Yes.
Hey, you got the mustache. You'd match up with the mascot.
And he's a defense. And he was a defensive player. He would probably like. I think that would actually be good for the Boise State Rob Akey rivalry.
Because players didn't the players like Akey there.
Yeah, the players definitely
liked
Akey.
He did a pretty good job.
And Idaho liked Akey.
At a very difficult place to win, he did a good job. And he did have the 1 year that was pretty good.
Yep.
So that's we're not to rain on UNLV's parade, but I thought that we wanted to bring up the Lane Kiffin thing, which it's possible.
I can totally see that now.
Because also, if you ever listen
that's, to – That's only after Lane Kiffin loses to Utah State this year.
And or Hawaii.
No. And or
But listening to the guys that told Rubble, they made some wager a year or so ago, or they bring it up every now and then. The amount of career coaching jobs that Lane Kiffin will have at a head coaching at an FBS or above level, NFL or FBS.
I remember that.
I think it, what they put it, 4.5, I think.
Yeah.
And he's already been at Oakland, USC, and Tennessee. So 3 years right there. But onto the schedule. Enough.
To the schedule.
Okay. Right. Here's what they got here. Oh, also, scheduling note, the Arizona game, people should know, is not going to be at University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale. It'll be a home game. Thank you for not selling out your program. They get 8 home games, which, depending how you feel about UNLV home game, it's good for them. But basically, here's the big game. They play Minnesota.
I hate the stadium. I hate the stadium. I actually like going to the games.
That's an interesting take, but good to know. Their schedule starts off pretty difficult. They get Minnesota on the road, seven-time national champion Minnesota.
Seven-time national champion Minnesota.
Check out the media guide. Mostly 6 were pre-World War II, I believe.
So basically the arrival of World War II and American isolationism killed Minnesota football.
Bingo, exactly. And also the rise of the wet people actually realizing there's good weather out west.
Okay, anyway.
That's true. But Minnesota, I don't know too much about the Gophers. We'll discuss them once week one comes around. But it's going to be a winnable game. Look what they did last year. They're bringing back experience. It is playing at a away game. It is on the opening night of college football. So it's that Thursday, August 29th on the Big Ten Network. So check that out. I should probably know more about Minnesota now, but we have a couple weeks for that.
This is one of those games I could easily see if the Halk brothers fix everything before the season starts. That could be a wake-up call. Hey, here's UNLV game.
Sure, because it's like the scheduling they should really do, because I've always harped on for years. You may have, like, you got your CSU-Alabama to get the money game. Utah State-USU was made before they got pretty good. They need to schedule teams like this, Minnesota, Indiana, Iowa State, Washington, teams like that, Vanderbilt, if you can get a team, SEC, Duke, Virginia, teams that are power conferences but not like a power team. Whereas if you win, outside of the league, it's considered a decent upset for people who casually watch college football. But if it's a loss, it's whatever you lost to a bad team. You know what I mean? It's where they want to schedule a winnable game. If they win, it helps them out a lot. If they lose, whatever, you lost to a team, it's not a big loss to them. You're not forced to go get your butt kicked 60-0 playing some power team. This is who they need to be scheduling, because Minnesota, they're going to be not going to be that great, especially based off last year. And they got, well, they do have one of the best. They do have Jerry Kill roaming the sidelines, which is always good to see. Do you have an early prediction at all about this game?
Honestly, this is what I'm going to say about that. If the offensive line gives Cornette space, bam, and gives Sherry time to throw, regardless how many points the defense gives up, because we're talking about a big offense here, B1G offense, UNLV can win that game.
So you mean a slow pace, 3 yards dust, and try to run up the middle on 3rd and 10?
Exactly.
That's what you're. And oh, we also neglected to mention. They also have Devontae Davis, a pretty good wide receiver.
Yes. So basically, Nick Sherry to Devontae Davis almost all day.
He was 61 receptions. He was didn't get the end zone too often. Yards were okay. Still got the receptions. He just didn't get the ball enough. They can get to him in Minnesota, whatever. It's the Big Ten. They're a below average team. They're probably favorite. I think they're favored to win this game.
I think the opening line was 10 points.
Yeah, well, it's way too much. But that's all we'll get into that. It's just a game where it's a very winnable game, in my opinion. I don't know if they'll do it, but here's the thing. If they can get that first win, it'll set the tone for the season.
Because
the following week they play Arizona, which is probably going to be a loss, even though they're replacing a quarterback. However, they do have Kadeem Carey, who's pretty good at running the ball. So they're not going to beat Arizona, but if they're going to want to save Houck's job or maybe make a bowl game, they need to beat Minnesota. After that, they get Central Michigan, who's always a pretty good team in the MACtion, not the WAC, because they WAC, and the MAC. So that's whatever. It's Central Michigan.
I would say they beat Central Michigan.
I think they could do it, but the thing is, here's the thing.
They get them at home.
Yes, they get them at home, but the only reason we're going to mention Western Illinois, we're just going to move quickly here, because they lost to the FCS program the past 2 years. You cannot lose this game.
No,
that's all I can say. You have to.
If you want to save your job, you cannot lose the Western Illinois.
You have to win this game by a lot, because their schedule sets up nicely. Because their first half is, their schedule's not easy, but it's pretty good. Minnesota, like I said, they're 50-50. Arizona, no. Central Michigan, 70%, I'd say, win. Which that's kind of weird to say that they give them a better chance to beat a team that's better than them in a different league, but just because it's home. But New Mexico, I think, is what we really want to see, in my opinion, because it's on the road, it's your conference opener game. At that point, if they're 3-1, that's what did you say their chances of being 3-1 at that point would be? 50%.
I'm going to give it 40.
40, okay. So two, but that's for them, that they'd take it. I'm assuming they'd have more.
No, they'll take you take that 3-1.
That's more wins than last year.
They've already that's already one more win than last year. That's like Bob Davey, New Mexico-esque style improvement that the UNLV athletic department wants to see.
Exactly. And going to New Mexico, we know the Lobos have the pistol attack, Cole Gauchy. What's his name? Casey Carrier. Can't believe forget the Carriers, the running back. That I don't know if they'll win that game. We're not going to decide that now. But if they're 2-2 or 3-1, that's a game, because New Mexico's obviously historically been bad as well the past couple years. So it's not like a game where just because UNLV's been losing a bunch of games, they know New Mexico's not perceived not much better. Because you know when you go up against a team where we always lose to this team, they're always so good. It's the opposite. They're always this bad. They'll have some confidence. And assuming they'll be on winning two games in a row, a pretty likely chance, it's going to be a game where they'll have the confidence to do fairly well and possibly win that game. Just that being on the road, it's a different story.
See, and as somebody who predicted New Mexico to win a bowl game or to go to a bowl game this year.
I'm pretty close to that.
To go to a bowl game, I'm predicting at New Mexico that's going to be a loss.
Probably, but I'd be what they did last year. It's not going to be – well, they're both not projected to be good. But
and a final note on a final note on the Leatherneck football program.
What's
this
that?
This is Western Illinois. They are the Leathernecks, yes.
That's an awesome nickname, of course.
That is an awesome nickname. The Leathernecks went 3-8 last year.
good.
If they have to win the Western
Alliance.
They
have to win that
game. Have to.
Do you, okay, right. If they lose that game, is Halk going to finish the season?
No.
Oh, all right then. So there's going to be another Halk in charge?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, I could maybe see that, especially if they're 0-4 at that point. Because that's not out of the possibility to lose to Minnesota, Arizona, or Central Michigan, all three.
Yeah.
No. And then we got Hawaii's, because I was on a radio station with the Hawaii guys a week or two ago. They always bring up this game. What's up with UNLV? Hawaii has to beat UNLV. I'm like, well, I don't know, guys. I was kind of
UNLV must beat Hawaii.
I didn't want to be rude to them, but I'm like, honestly, Hawaii's not going to be good unless you can – Taylor Graham is overworldly and Billy Ray is awesome at catching those passes.
And Hawaii has defense.
That too, because they lose Mike Edwards, I believe it was, the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that point comes up, their schedule is killer. So after Hawaii, at Fresno, at Nevada, host San Jose State, host Utah State, open date at Air Force, host San Diego State. Hey, they do miss Boise this year. Is that a consolation?
They do miss Boise. not for me, because I don't get to go to that game.
True. But that's a tough second half, man.
I will say that if they're to win one of those games.
Air Force? No.
No.
Nevada.
No, Nevada.
The Fremont Cannon is red.
Going red.
Ooh. Don't let Nevada fans hear that.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, it goes with my I hate Nevada.
Of course. You hate every team, even your own team, right? We're not going to get into that. But that second half is brutal. If they're going to have – not to say bowl game's going to happen. If we're overly optimistic, they start off great. They somehow start off 4-0. No, excuse me. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to be crazy here.
3-1.
3-1. 3-1, yeah. I was thinking, staring at it. I had my schedule pulled down a little bit farther. I missed a Arizona game. 3-1, and then they'll say they're 4-2 at the midway point, which is, for them, most wins they've had in a couple years. Halk's going to keep his job. They're still – I'm still not going to give them any money to go 2-4 down the stretch the rest of the way.
No.
They're not going to beat Fresno. The only teams they could beat would be Nevada and Air Force, in my opinion. And, San Jose State, Utah State, they're still going to be better than Nevada, even though they're home games.
Well, and they beat Air Force last year.
True, but that was, I don't know, that was a weird game. I don't know what Air Force is doing. They get a bye week before Air Force. That'll help them out studying that triple option, especially with the Tim Halk. Never really seen that, I don't think, or at least not consistently. So if I'm going to go best case scenario, like I said, they start out 4-2 midway point. I think 5 wins is the best they can do this year. If they exceed all expectations, I'm going to say 5 wins.
Best case scenario?
Is that too harsh? Yes, I am.
Absolute best case scenario?
Yeah, is that too harsh? 5 wins?
I can see 6 wins.
Nevada and Air Force, I assume?
Nevada and Air Force.
I don't know, man. That's
absolute best case scenario. They have the talent to do it. They're not going to do it. But they have the talent to do
so. Nice. I think offensively, dude, it's just that, obviously, we harp on this whole show, defense is a thing. So what do you think? What do you think they're going to do?
4-8.
You still think they're going to get 4-8?
I still think 4-8.
Right. Minnesota. No. Who?
Minnesota.
Okay.
Central Michigan. Western Illinois. Hawaii.
Okay.
I give the 5th win at Nevada.
I'm gonna go. They're probably gonna get 3 wins.
So you're
this isn't my official prediction. We'll have our official prediction show later on in a couple weeks, where we will be. I'll tattoo them on my arm so people can see who we're predicting this year. But I don't think they're gonna win on, because here's the thing: they're still UNLV. Is that bad to say?
No,
they're still the Rebels. They're gonna find a way to lose the game, even because they don't know how to win. That's the problem. They've never known how to win. They got talent. Tim Cornette's good. We assume Nick Sherry's going to take the next step. We assume the offensive line will find another starter, maybe two possibly. Starters in depth to do fine. Are we going to assume that those 10 returning defensive starters are going to suddenly move up to a top 50 defense from a number 100 defense? We don't know. And the main thing, it's I'm not sold on anything UNLV's done until they can prove it to me. And even when they do, I probably will still be fairly skeptical about the team. And so I'm thinking they'll probably beat Western Illinois. I don't know. I see three wins as them still being still better than last year. Because if I'm going to give them three wins, it's Western Illinois, Hawaii, and Central Michigan. I could see them getting one or
two. I think we could see those as three locks.
No, I'm not going to give Central Michigan. I'm not giving – no. You're going to give UNLV a lock over any game. What they, have you not seen them the past how many years? You're going to give them a lock. They've lost – do I need to pull up that Southern Utah score again?
No, fine. No locks.
They do not deserve a lock status. I don't care if they're playing the local high school team down the street from me. I'm not giving them a lock for anything.
Well, if that high school team is Bishop Gorman, no, I would not give them a lock.
Good point. But no, I'm not giving the main lock. I think I can see three wins. That's an improvement. And here's the thing too. They're going to be competitive. Like when they play Utah State or Fresno or San Diego State, they're not going to get blown out like they have in the past. They're going to be competitive. They're going to have good games. Basically, to keep Pout Keeper's job, I think he needs to get to four wins, but also be more competitive. Like similar to last year, but even a step closer. If that makes sense, where you lose a lot of games by 5 to 10 points, you're not getting blown out, and you're not having games where you're losing 50-10.
Yeah.
But as of right now, here's the thing. If we go back to the Hout keeping his job, they're pretty patient with Mike Sanford. They were hoping to get what he did at Utah to translate to Vegas, which obviously did not. Even though, because him being the offensive coordinator, I don't know how much he did with Urban Meyer at Utah about what he coaching, because Dan Mullen was pretty intricate, and that's why he went to Florida to be the OC and now obviously in Mississippi State. Like we kind of joked earlier, if they start out 0-4, he's gone. But how realistically do you think, like, what if we put a benchmark, what does he have to do to keep his job? Because it's got to be wins. He can't be close.
I'm telling you, he's got to go 4-8.
Okay. So by my prediction, he'd be canned.
Yes.
And then they bring Lane Kiffin, right?
Lane Kiffin.
Oh, nah, I don't know. That's. I want to see. This team, they're an interesting. I think they could be an interesting team. Because if we let's finish this up really quick. I want to go back to the quarterback really quick because the Mountain West. If people don't know the league or follow the league, there's a lot of good quarterbacks, and like which we'll mention every other show every 5 seconds. And Nick Sherry is, if he improves, it's like the Joe Southwick thing. We assume he's going to be better, and he had a good year last year. But do we know if he can? Because Nick Sherry averaged more yards per game than Joe Southwick. You hear that one commenter who tried to say I was wrong about most impressive QB in the nation? I hope you're listening. Yeah, no. But no, seriously, Derek Carr obviously going to be NFL draft top three rounds. David Fales. Chucky Keaton is going to be around next year. Cody Fajardo, they're dual threat guys who can run and throw. Brett Smith, I honestly think he could be the best quarterback in the league if he stays healthy and Robert Heron does as well. And they could find a couple other receivers. And then you drop down, there's Nick Sherry. And then there's also at Hawaii. Taylor Graham from Ohio State. Graham,
which you can easily see as a top half Mountain West quarterback.
Oh, you know what we forgot to mention? The Hawaii debacle with Aaron Price early on. Aaron, OC is gone. Basically, Norm Chow has the offense with two graduate assistants. Well, I guess Jordan Wynn's technically a coach. He's a QB coach, but two newbies and him running the offense. So have fun, Hawaii. But still, if there's so many quarterbacks. Sherry, he was fourth in the league in yards per game on a bad team, and he's a freshman. If Caleb Herring is really going to play, I don't think he's going to be our receiver because he's listed as a backup QB as well. I'm just saying, if he can improve a little bit, and they have the offensive weapons to be a top half team offensively. It's just, last word, defense.
Defense.
So That's it for UNLV. I want to be optimistic. I want to see how the offense plays because Tim Cornette's also an NFL caliber player on the team. And then they also have another running back really quick. Like they have Adonis Smith who could be pretty good as well. There would be obviously a step down, but not huge step down in running the ball because he's not like a guy at all. It's bringing whoever and have because Cornette didn't have the carry. He's not going to be a 40 carry guy a game. Well, mainly because they'll be losing and got a pass. So that's where we're at. I want to see how their offense does. And I'm Are you excited for UNLV football to see what they, if they can become?
I am. I have hope for UNLV football. Oh. Just like I have. Yeah.
Is it the same hope as New Mexico last year?
In terms of what?
I predicted them to beat some good teams. New Mexico last year a couple of times.
Yeah, and I mean it goes back to you know, New Mexico did do a lot better last year, which gives me even more hope for New Mexico this year.
You were correct on that. I would say partially.
I have a lot of hope for UNLV this year. I don't know if they're, you know, I don't know if they can
get the win,
do everything that I hope that they can do. But I really, it's very realistic. It's not out of the question. And hopefully things roll their way.
Yeah, even if,
they're going to, and it won't come at the cost of Boise State.
We'll just see how they go, because I'm the same thing. They got to get a couple more wins. But the league, it's like the league last year kind of set up for New Mexico, not to go off on that, but the league was not very good last year. It was, Fresno had some good offense, but they were still 9-4 last year and got smoked by SMU. New Mexico, hopefully they can learn off that and get better. Same with UNLV, they're closer. Hopefully they can realize, maybe here's what it could come down to. They'll have confidence that we were not blown out like we were in 2011. Like the guys who were around, like Cornette was around there, how like certain players were around in 2011, which was probably one of their worst years ever, losing so many games by so many points. Maybe that could be their thing, their, like how it could instill in them, like, hey, we were close. Look at Minnesota. We triple overtime. We had chances to win. We were within a touchdown to Washington State. We're so close. We know we can do it. We've got to change a few things. But if you think about it, if it's 8 or 10 point game, that's like two to four plays that the game's completely different.
Even better, maybe they listen to us.
they really want to listen to me? 2-3 wins?
Well, maybe. No. They'll just ignore you.
Oh yeah.
They'll listen to me.
Yeah. Who? Yes. Maybe, but I think that's where they can get some confidence and maybe learn that they're not this run of the terrible team that's ranked 120th by the Sentinel. You know what I mean? It's something where they know they can beat teams, or at least hang with teams. That's all it takes. So I think we've discussed enough about UNLV. We've gone probably longer than we should have on UNLV. I think we've gone an hour. Oh my goodness. Wow.
Let's just put it this way. We've talked an hour more about UNLV football than ESPN will ever.
Can we add time to that, because they will discount UNLV football? The reverse said, yeah, we did discuss some news, but nobody gives coverage to these teams, so somebody's got to do it, and we think we know a good amount to let people know what's going on. Is that fair enough?
Yes.
So with that, we will end the show here. Just check out our website, mwcconnection.com. Check our top 50 countdown, because Tim Cornette is coming out. It's within the week, so you know he's a top 20 guy. Check out our Twitter, mwcconnection. And basically, football is 3 weeks away. We're excited. Do you have a rebel yell you want to do at the end of the show here? Anything about excitement or a mustache you want to go to represent that guy? The what's their mascot name? It's just Reb, right?
It's Hey Reb.
So that's what we got tonight. So good luck, UNLV. And upcoming, our next show will be in a couple days, Utah State. And we are efforting to get somebody who knows Utah State better than you and I do. If not, it'll be you and me just jerking around and doing an hour worth of Utah State football. Does that sound good?
Let's do it.
All right, everybody, just join us next time. And, yeah, check out mwcconnection.com for your latest Mountain West updates and news about everything.